This is the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys Network. Here's your host, Will Hill.
Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast, presented by Goal Boys. Coming up on the show, Jeff Parles of Sports by the Book will join us. We will go over week two picks, get his thoughts on week one, any overreactions, get his thoughts on some baseball too. He is always great with that. So excited to talk to Jeff. But it is Friday, and that means it is time to make the picks, and I will give you a few from the NFL, a few from college, and away we go here. I will start with Tennessee plus four. I think you can get a 4.5, but we'll call it four. I just think this is a very tough spot for the Jets. I mentioned the other day, hey, don't jump off the ship. If you like the Jets, there were some positive signs. There were reasons for rust. That was a bad pick by me last week picking on them, and I usually don't like to pick on a team, have it lose, then jump off them. It just feels like you're a victim of recency bias. I don't think this is the case. This is just a really tough spot for the Jets to play late Monday night, a game where they were on the field for 70 plays. The 49ers had 39 minutes of time of possession. And now you're going to turn around and play 1 o'clock Eastern on the road and laying north of a field goal. And if you look at the Titans last week, I think everyone made it about, you know, what a lucky cover for the Bears. And I think the Bears stealing the game was a story. The Titans defense went underrated, unsung in that game because they held the Bears to nothing on offense. Bears had 148 yards of offense and 2.8 yards per play. They completely throttled the Bears. So maybe the Titans are just one of the more underrated units in the league. Tough spot for the Jets. Good defense for the Titans. I could see a 20-17 type of game. I will take the points. Give me the Titans plus the four again. I think there's some plus 4.5s out there. Next pick is I will go back to the well here with the under Steelers Broncos. Steelers to me are just an under team. It is 36.5. I will go under. I think both teams are going to be conservative. Tomlin's a conservative coach. Peyton saw his quarterback make a million mistakes, could have easily made a couple of more last week with the interceptions, a tough spot in Seattle. So Knicks is going to run a lot. Fields is going to run a lot. Pittsburgh, I said the other day, they're basically like the service academy. They're going to run. I would think Denver will be conservative too. I think both teams come into this game and say, you know what, if we don't turn the ball over, as long as we're conservative, we can score 17 points and probably win this game, you know, 17-16 or something ugly like that. So I will go under. I know it's a low number, and that 37 is a key number because, hey, if this lands 20-17, you lose, and the 36.5 is really cutting it short where any points off of turnovers or any kind of special teams, anything. It's a low total to stay under, but I think Pittsburgh to me is an under team until further notice. So that is the second pick. I will go Browns plus three too. And this was four on Monday. I think the move here is the correct move. And I like Carolina plus six too. I was on the Megapod with Gil. I gave out Carolina plus six. I think Carolina, that's just an overreaction number, but I'll go with the Browns here plus the three as one of my picks as well, just because this is a simple handicap to me. The Jags season win total over under was 8.5. The Browns over under was 8.5. That was like a week ago, 5 days ago. The market was telling you 5 days ago, these are dead even teams. Now the Browns play badly, and all of a sudden this is a 3-point line. I can't get there. Watson did look a little better in the second half. He missed the second half of last season, then he didn't play in the preseason. So maybe he needed to get some of the rust off again. I don't think he's ever going to be the player they traded for. But Jacksonville does not have a great home field advantage. This idea that home field is worth three in the NFL is not the case anymore. Home field is worth 1.5, maybe 2 points, some of the better home fields. Jacksonville does not have one of the more intimidating home field advantages. It's a very tame, very mild home field advantage. So, you know, you give it a point and you're talking about a key number of three here. I'll take the Browns plus the three. Should have talked about it earlier in the week when it was 4 or 3.5, but I will still take the Browns plus three. I just think this is an overreaction. So those are the NFL plays. And I mentioned I do like Carolina plus six as well. I just think that is an overreaction. They're begging you to take Carolina. They're just inflating it so much. Carolina was so bad, but look, it was 6.5 and it's gone down to six. So somebody's betting Carolina, which I can understand just because the Chargers are not at the point where they should be favored by almost a touchdown on the road against anybody. So I'll call that a pick too. Carolina plus six, Cleveland plus three, Titans plus four, and under 36.5 Steelers Broncos. I like the fact that I'm just not laying points. I just think it's hard to lay points in this league. And I try to, I'm going to try to just avoid it at all costs, laying points as much as possible. You know, not to say never, maybe 80% of the time I'll take the dog in the game. I just think it's the NFL. Every game is close, and when you're getting the points, it's usually a good way to look at it. Look at the dog first in these games. So those are the college picks. And I'll throw one more in for college here. I will take Purdue plus the 10.5 against Notre Dame. To me, I sat here last week talking about Northern Illinois and how they were a good matchup, or not a good matchup, but it was a good spot for them against Notre Dame. I didn't think they'd win the game outright. But to me, Notre Dame has major issues. Offensive line is inexperienced. The quarterback got hit a million times. There's rumors he's got dealing with a bad shoulder. I think it's his throwing shoulder, but who knows if he's 100%. And he's not that good of a passer. He's really not. There's not a lot of explosive plays. I think they have one 20-yard pass play. 20 plus yard pass play on the whole season. So it's hard to cover 10 and a half, 11 points when you're not getting big chunk plays. It's going to be a running, plotting team. Those points on the road look good. So I will add Purdue here. And I talked about this. I don't think it was on here. Maybe it was on another show I was doing. To me, Tennessee at 12-1 to win the SEC is a good bet because they look like they have a good quarterback, a monster front four defensively, and their schedule, which looked tough coming into the season, is not as bad. Alabama hasn't looked great, and they get Alabama at home in Tennessee. Oklahoma at Oklahoma was a tough game going into the season. Well, Oklahoma looked awful the other day against Houston. All right, you get Georgia at Georgia. That's probably going to be a loss, but you can probably afford one loss. I think if you have bets to make the SEC title game at like 3-4-1, maybe that's a better way to go. But to me, Tennessee, if you're talking about a team outside of the Georgia, Ohio State, and I guess Oregon that can sneak into a semifinal or a national final, they have the talent. They have the upside. They got a good quarterback, good front four, and a coach that can scheme up offense. I think that is a very dangerous team, a very live team. So 12-1 to win the SEC. So those are the plays. Plays were pretty good this week. Hopefully we have another good week. But coming up next, it is Jeff Parle, Sports by the Book. That is next. This is the Should a Bit More podcast. All right, we are back. Should a Bit More podcast. You can catch him at Sports by the Book. One of our favorites. He is back. It is Jeff Parle. Jeff, it is week two. It's overreaction week. Fun time of the year. Thanks for coming on, man. What's going on?
Always, always good to be with you, Will, and it is always overreaction time, Will. You know that, but especially in week two in the NFL.
I haven't felt like we've gotten a bunch of overreactions. I think it's kind of on everybody's radar. Hey, it's week one. We didn't get anything that crazy that happened. I don't know. I guess I'll ask you, do you think that we've gotten any overreactions, and do you feel differently about any of these teams than you did this time last week?
Not really. I don't think we've gotten any wild overreactions except from some of the people you would expect to be wildly overreacting. So that's really the only place I've seen some crazy overreactions. The only team that I thought was going to be high end that I have reservations on, I'm not counting Green Bay because now that it sounds like Love is going to be back within the next, maybe even the next 2 weeks, Green Bay should be able to survive, maybe. As long as they're not 0-4, they can survive and still be okay in an NFC playoff race because they still look good with Love being healthy. The only one I'm concerned about is the Bengals because Burrow did not look like himself. And I know the Bengals have done this garbage the last few years where they just don't show up the first few weeks of the year. They've done it the last 3 years especially. Didn't hurt him 2 years ago. Burrow gets hurt and the whole season falls. Well, actually went a little better than you would have expected with Browning. But still, you missed the playoffs because Burrow gets hurt. But Burrow just didn't look like himself. It looked like he struggled to grip the football at times. I know there was the water bottle incident that everyone, that Burrow didn't even realize was a thing in the press conferences this week. But yeah, Cincinnati, I am concerned because especially other than when they went on that Super Bowl run, I know a lot of people thought it was a little bit of a fluky run. They made it back to the AFC title game the following year to make it not as much of a fluke. But they really are dependent on that talenting people, and the talent on the outside just isn't quite there anymore.
I agree.
In comparison to what it's been, they used to be three wide receivers deep and as good as anyone, 1, 2, 3 in the NFL. Higgins isn't healthy. Chase is whatever's going on with Jamar Chase on top of the fact that he wants a new contract. They're not as talented as they've been during this Burrow era. So there is a little bit of concern on Cincinnati. That's the only high-end team that I had projected going into the year that I really have any concern whatsoever about after week one. I know everyone will point to the Jets. They got beat up by a really good team. If they lose to Tennessee, different story. But if they bounce back, beat the Titans, and go on a little bit of a run against these four teams upcoming before that Monday nighter against Buffalo, that they're much better, they're better than all four, then all right. They lost to the best team, one of the three best teams in the NFL. It doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, back to your point about Cincy and And Burrow, it's going back. I talked about this. I had Mike Sando on talking about the quarterback rankings. The Bengals won a lot of those games. I know people reduce it to, oh, this quarterback beat that quarterback, and that's just the way sports media culture is now. They won a lot of those games with defense, and the kicker came through, and that defense just has not been the same. New England just lined it up and ran it right at them and didn't light up the scoreboard. But since he could never get off the field when they needed to, and last year the Cincy defense was bad, bottom of the league in yards per play allowed. So the Cincy defense combined with what you're saying about the skill guys being diminished, to me, that is concerning.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of feels like Amaruno should have got out of there when he could have, right? I mean, that's kind of the deal. We see this all the time with coordinators, or especially in a college game where
you're hot, then you're not.
Then you have lesser jobs, yeah. And then you get offered the big one. It's like, no, I'm going to wait, and then you never get offered a big one again. Kind of like Matt Campbell at Iowa State. But, you know, it's just one of those with the Bengals. You're right. The defense, part of that run, at least the first run, was their defense was able to bone up at big times in all those games. They in the AFC wild card round, the second year, they obviously had the biggest defensive play of anyone in the whole playoffs, basically the Hubbard 90-some-odd-yard fumble return touchdown. The Buffalo game that second year, they kicked Buffalo's ass. So, whatever. I mean, they kicked, destroyed them in every facet. But, you know, look, there is something to be said about that defense going backwards. And again, in that division, your margin for error is really slim because of how good the rest of the competition is in that division. And that's broader now to the AFC, where the AFC, again, going into the year, Will, I genuinely thought that other than Denver, Vegas, and New England, every other team at least had somewhat of an argument on why they could be a potential playoff team this year. And that just means your league, your conference is deep, and your conference is mostly at least some at the bottom, below average teams, even on that bottom, like Tennessee. Like, you could have seen a path where Levis improved. I think we have realized that probably is not happening, even with one game. Like the Colts, Anthony Richardson's one of the most fun players. Like, there's arguments for all those teams you may not necessarily think are playoff teams, except for those three. And Cincinnati does not have a big margin for error because of that.
Who do you like in week two?
Who do I like in week two? You know, week two is always one of those snapback weeks where it kind of feels like the public that has had those numbers up all week long just does well in week one. And then week two is the snapback. The one that stands out to me, and you might have to buckle up on this, but if you're getting 7.5 with Tampa in Detroit, and I understand Tampa covered last week as a favorite, they played one of the worst teams in the league in the Commanders, but Detroit might take a little bit of time to get going, as we saw last week. And for the Bucs, Baker Mayfield looked great. He was, to me, he was the second best quarterback in the NFL last week. So you're in a scenario here where you're getting north of a touchdown with a team that's these two teams played twice last year. The second game, the playoff game, Tampa covered pretty easily. I think this is a one score game. So I'll very happily take the 7.5 if you can get it with Tampa Bay. That's my favorite of the week. And then the rest of it, if you missed the best of it of Minnesota, don't chase it now. Even though I, again, still see 5.5. If you really want to take Minnesota, I don't mind that against the Niners. And I like the Patriots. I like the Patriots north of 3. Hard trip for Seattle going across the country. I think that's going to be a super low-scoring game because both of those defenses played great in week one, and I expect both of those defenses to be top half units the whole year. So if you're giving me 3.5 with a home team, even though I don't think New England is still like, I don't think they're going to magically be like, oh, they're 6-2 all of a sudden in week 8, but you're giving me a field goal. That's where I would go. But Tampa's still the number one play for me. All these dogs, Will Hill, all these dogs here in week 2.
What are your thoughts on Jets Titans? Cause I think it's a tough spot for the Jets. I actually like the Titans plus the points. I think short week, you're going from the West Coast late Monday night to 1 o'clock Eastern Sunday. You're on the field for a million plays. I would be a little concerned the Browns carved the Jets defense up late last year. The defense didn't look great the other night. I worry the defense is starting to regress a little bit. And I just think, well, maybe the Jets win the game by a field goal. And boy, I can't imagine the takes flying around if the Jets are ever 0-2 sitting here on Monday. But that being said, what do you like here, Jets Titans, if anything?
I'm going to stay off now that it's 4.5. Like, now that it's bled through four, there's nothing to do in this game. You could only look at Tennessee. I mean, look, the Titans did a historic thing, Will. Being up 17 is a four or more point underdog and not even covering. I mean, that's only happened one other time since 2019. And obviously that's famous Texans and Chiefs game in the playoffs was the only other time that has happened since then. You know, I think the Jet defense gets right in this game. This is the right sort of matchup. I know that Tennessee's improved on the outside with bringing Calvin Ridley, but he did not look good in that first game against Chicago. DeAndre Hopkins isn't 100% healthy. The running backs don't really scare you, even though the offensive line for Tennessee is good. So that is a concern. If you think that the Jet defense can't turn it around against the run game, that offensive line will create holes for Tony Pollard and Tajae Sharpe. So that could be the one issue. When it's all said and done, though, I think the Jets win by a touchdown just because there's such a big quarterback gap in this game. Where Rodgers, even though the numbers weren't fully there, you watch the game on Monday night, Aaron Rodgers looked perfectly solid. For a guy who hasn't played in over a year, he didn't look like vintage Aaron Rodgers, but he looked like a guy who's a top 12 quarterback in the NFL, which if the Jets defense gets their act together, that's all the Jets really need to win this game by a touchdown. If Rodgers is a top 12 QB, you know Levis is going to make at least one back-breaking mistake in this game like we saw against the Bears. And if that happens, the Jets will win. I'm not willing to lay 4.5. 3.5, I thought it was okay. But again, I wish it was – if you just saw a flat three, which are way gone at this point, that would be the only way I'd take the Jets, Will.
At what point would Salah – let's just say they lose this game. At what point would Salah be on the hot seat? I can't imagine.
If they lose this game, he's on the hot seat. But he's not going anywhere. I mean, the only way he's going anywhere in season is to like 2-6. And it's completely melted. And at that point, there's going to be a lot of other conversations going on. If something like that were to happen, well, I just don't see. I know this is a gauntlet playing three games in 11 days right now, especially with a 40-year-old quarterback and also against a New England defense in that last game that is no pushover. But and the Jets should really be 3-2 at worst after these next four games. And if they're 3-2, they're still totally fine in the grand scheme of things. Well,
are you an award better for NFL? I don't know.
Not much. Okay. Not much. Only if something presents itself.
Anything? Nothing. Did you bet anything before the season or anything yet?
No. I the only thing that I considered betting was taking a piece of Sam Darnold comeback player of the year. But I'm a little bit concerned that they're not going to be giving it to a guy who just wasn't particular. They're not going to do the Geno Smith much anymore.
I agree.
And especially in a season where Rodgers, Cousins, and Burrow were all coming off significant injuries.
Yeah, and Herbert.
That's also not a bad idea either. But one of those four quarterbacks is going to win it. Even though Cousins – actually, that was another thing I forgot to bring up earlier. Atlanta's very alarming if Cousins can't move. Because if Cousins – if that's the version of Kirk Cousins we're getting this year, they're going to have to go to Michael Penix. Because that version of Kirk Cousins is a bottom-tier quarterback.
Yeah.
Just because he can't move. And what made Kirk Cousins at times a top-flight quarterback in this league – was the fact that he's one of the best play-action quarterbacks in the NFL. And he couldn't even do play-action because he can't go under center right now.
Yep, I would totally agree with that. Absolutely. And I was thinking for comeback player of the year. I wonder, and Hamlin's went from 100-1 to 35-1. I wonder if with Hamlin starting, would they give you like an apology from the year before? Hey, now you're starting. Now you're
maybe,
a comeback player.
Maybe.
At 100-1, I thought it was worth a shot. Down to like 30-1 now, I don't think it's. But that's such a weird award where, you know, 10 different people could have 10 different
that's
versions.
That's the hardest. Of all the markets, that's the hardest market.
Yeah.
The only other one that's a little bit difficult is if you get a scenario with offensive rookie of the year where you get a quarterback coming in midstream, which Drake May would be the only possibility with that now at this point with the other guys all starting. And, of course, McCarthy not playing at all this year with the knee injury.
I want to get to baseball, but just quickly, any college football thoughts? Same sort of question, philosophy. Anything has changed your mind going into college football where some of these teams are going to be – it's amazing. I've played three, sometimes maybe Hawaii, I think, plays its fourth game this weekend. It's hard to believe that goes by that quickly. But any college football bets this weekend or thoughts just in general here?
Yeah, I actually do like Hawaii on the road at Sam Houston State. I thought that game should have been a pick, and now it's all the way out to 4.5, 5. I don't get that. I'll very happily take points with Hawaii this week. I just want to bring up, because this is the first year of the college football playoff, and I forget if it was Tom Fornelli or Bud Elliott. It was one of those guys over at Cover 3 who was making this point this week, where for Notre Dame, okay, at least to me now, after losing to Northern Illinois, I don't care that you went to College Station and beat A&M. If you don't win out, you should not be getting in the college football playoff at this point if you're Notre Dame. And this is going to be a very interesting test of the system right away, because the Irish schedule is not that difficult, Will. Like, their Florida State game that looked very tough, it's not now. Their toughest games remaining are Louisville and at USC. So, like, yeah, maybe if they lose to USC by a field goal, maybe you could make the argument at 10-2, especially if USC's in a Big Ten title game, which all of a sudden looks like to be a possibility. But this is a really nice little stress test right out of the gate for the college football committee with this new 12-team format. How much will these damaging bad losses count against teams that are big-time brands that may win double-digit games still, like Notre Dame?
Baseball, where are you at with your Mets? Who are the three teams? Who are the three wild cards? The Mets have a tough stretch coming up.
Yeah, they do.
A tough 13-game stretch. And who wins the AL East?
The Yankees win the AL East. We'll start there. We'll go easy. Baltimore, Will, we talked about this a few weeks ago. When the Yankees had that stretch where they were non-White Sox division, because they're not a major league team, the Yankees were the worst major league team for a solid 5 weeks. And the Orioles couldn't put the division away. A high-end team would have been up 7 or 8 games by the end of that, and it would have been over. And now the Yankees, again, I don't think they're quite as good as they looked at the beginning of the year, but they look like a legitimate playoff team, a legitimate, hey, this team could win, get to an ALCS with a legitimate draw. And Baltimore, I think Baltimore's, if they get Kansas City, I think Kansas City's beating them in the best of three, in all honesty, Will, which is what the matchup is when we're recording this. Yankees win the AL East. The NL side, so of the four teams, the Padres have 3 games with the White Sox the next to last weekend of the season, Will, which is basically 3 gimme, gotta have it. Hey, you're adding 3 wins to the Padres' record regardless, which puts the Padres in a scenario where they are clearly in the driver's seat of the 4 seed. For me, the top wild card goes through San Diego. The interesting thing, though, with that is that the Padres and the Diamondbacks end the season against each other in Arizona. So I'm very curious, because the Padres, let's say the Padres have like a 2-game lead on everyone going to the last weekend. Do they try to beat Arizona and get Arizona out of there? Do they win the first game and then shut it down completely because they want to play Arizona? Like, there's a lot of weird scenarios in there with the Padres. Especially if they have a spot wrapped up going into that last weekend of Arizona. I think the Diamondbacks are the weakest of the 4 teams, Will. I really do. I just don't trust their pitching, even though it has been at least at times high end this year. The Braves have the big lineup question, as we know. I think the Mets and the Padres are actually the 2 most well-rounded teams of the 4. But you mentioned it. The Mets have 7 games against Philadelphia left. So if you made me pick it today, I would still put the Mets in, because Atlanta has 4 with the Dodgers this weekend. That, like, if the Mets go 2-1 in Philadelphia and the Dodgers take 3 out of 4 from the Braves are I don't want to say they're done, because they're not, but the Braves have a monster uphill battle at that point, if that happens to happen. And it's definitely in play that the Mets could take 2 out of 3 with 2 of their 3 best pitchers going this weekend.
Any chance Lindor steals this MVP?
No, Otani's going 50-50. At least the old school voter sees that and they're not going to hesitate. This will be a what if for Lindor, where if Otani pitched this year, I wonder if this was actually more of a race, because he wouldn't be doing 50-50 if he was pitching this year. He'd probably have, what, 15 stolen bases, 20 stolen bases? Never went over 30 before this year. So I just think Otani, the 50-50 portion of it pushes him over the top. If I had a vote, I would vote for Lindor personally. I think the fact that his defense is high end, and the fact that, again, every time the Mets have needed a big hit, Wednesday included, the man has come through in a big spot. And there's a legitimate argument to be made that Mookie Betts is more important to the Dodgers than Ohtani is. But the voters will see 50-50, and there's just no way that they're going to avoid that when it's all said and done.
How about the two Rookie of the Year votes?
Whew. I mean, Merrill should win in the NL. Let's just start there. I know he's hurt, but I still think that's enough to get him there. And the American League, I have no clue. No clue. I mean, Will, do you think Keel gets there because of the major city vote? I mean,
Wells is the minus. Wells is odds on right now.
I mean, that's the other thing. You could do Wells. You could do Couser in Baltimore. I mean, there are a lot of. I don't know what the voters are going to do. I would say if you gave me one of the two Yankees, it's going to be one of them. Will, that would be the way I would play it at this rate. But I don't know. That is far and away the hardest one, because AL MVP, even though Judge hasn't hit a homer in a while, is still going to be Judge. Schoolboy, I think, has done enough to wrap up the American League side of the Cy, and the same deal with Sale on the NL. So really, the AL rookie is the only one that really makes any sort of sense. And I'm surprised that Wells is odds on. I'm going to be honest with you, Will. I would have thought that it was a bunch of guys just clumped together, with the short guy being about $1.06, $1.50, $1.40 at this point.
Yeah, small minus money. I'm looking like -120, -140 in some other spots.
Barely.
Yeah. But it's interesting. I actually think Skeens is live. I, man, he's just had such a dominant year. He's such a, I don't know. There's a beyond baseball, like, sort of face of the league. Not that he's the face of the league, because you have Judge and Ohtani, but there's just a popularity, and it is a popularity contest where I think if you had to vote today, it'd be a very close vote. And I never bought this idea, like, September 1st, they were going to shut him down. I mean, here we are mid-September, he's still pitching. So I don't know that, like, if he misses his last start due to being shut down, I don't know that that's going to sway votes. I think it's a fascinating vote.
Again, this is one of those where you could have set yourself up nicely with a bloated price on Merrill, and now have come back the other way on a bloated price on Skeens. If you'd won like one of those like 25 20s on Merrill, you probably should have by now taken something on Skeens the other way at the bloated plus price to at least lock something in.
And just hope Churio doesn't win, which I don't think he will. He's had a hell of a year.
He has had an amazing season. I just think, and that's another narrative thing, Will. The Brewers, even though they're going to win a division, have gone so far under the damn radar.
Amazing.
That I just don't think Churio is going to get there.
Yep, I'm with you. Jeff, always fun, man. Appreciate you coming on. Let everyone know where they can catch your stuff.
Sports by the Book on YouTube is the easiest way to watch us. Right now, 1 hour before kick on Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern time on Monday and Thursday, and then the really good one, myself, Vinny Maliula, and Chris Andrews. So great Behind the Book perspective at 5 on Friday, getting it for the weekend in the college football and the NFL.
Jeff, appreciate the time, man. We'll do it again soon. Thanks.
Always a pleasure, Will.
That will do it. Thank you to Jeff Parles. Enjoy the games. We will be back Monday. Rate, review, subscribe. See you then.